Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the esteemed Imported Water Committee meeting for Thursday, April 23rd, 2026. I'm Chair Myers, and this meeting is called to order. We are meeting in person with one board member participating remotely. General Counsel Edwards will make the announcement.
Thank you. Director Miller is participating under the just cause exception in AB 2449.
All right, thank you. Votes taken today will be by roll call vote. Marisol, would you please call out the roll?
Chair Myers?
Present.
Vice Chair Katz?
Here.
Vice Chair Madaffer?
Here.
Directors Ayala?
Here.
Castañeda?
Here.
Plessy? Plessy? Absent. Fong Sakai?
Bless you.
Good morning, I'm present.
Heidemann?
Here.
Kirschbaum?
Here.
Miller?
Here.
Paul?
Yes, present.
Rivera?
Present.
Scalzetti?
Here.
And Serrano. Chair, you have a quorum of the committee.
Thank you very much. As we discuss the items on the agenda, I will be calling on directors who push their speaker button. Please limit your comments to matters not already addressed and state all your points when you have a chance to speak so we can move through the agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda?
Chair Myers, we have no additions to the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Public comment. At this time, I'd like to ask if there are any public speakers.
Calling on public comment for matters on the Imported Water Committee agenda or within the jurisdiction of the committee. I believe we have one speaker, Courtney Brown. You will have 3 minutes to make your comments.
Thank you.
You may begin now. Hi. Okay. Hello. Good morning. My name is Courtney Brown. I'm a staff attorney with San Diego Coastkeeper. I was here last month. I'll probably continue to be here, so hopefully you're not sick of me yet. So I will try to get through this quickly because I have a few questions about a few of the items that will be presented during this committee this morning. I have to just note that we received the presentations yesterday. I reviewed them. And again, it would be probably a lot more conducive if I was giving this comment after the items were presented on, because I have to only assume that, I'm not sure if they'll be addressed during the presentation. So I just wanted to add that. But the first is about the Pure Water Southern California update. And as you'll see, it's slide 24 will list the Sites Reservoir project at $1.7 billion and the Delta Conveyance project at $9.5 billion. And those figures just appear to be significantly understated. The California Water Commission's own project review portal puts sites at $6.2 to $6.8 billion. And the Legislative Analyst Office has pegged the Delta Conveyance project at $20.1 billion, with some independent experts suggesting costs could be considerably higher. So I'm just hoping that staff will explain this discrepancy. Are these figures outdated or partial costs, or are they just county water authorities share? So the second will be about the Colorado River Hydrology and Basin States update. So it'll be slide 33, which is titled No Immediate Impact to California. But it also states that reductions for water year 2027, which is only 6 months away, are uncertain. And so that's pretty immediate. And we have a few specific questions on that. The first has to do with, so Lake Mead, if Lake Mead drops below 1,045 feet due to reduced releases from Lake Powell, California is mandated to take its first structural cuts. And meanwhile, the Bureau of Reclamation has already decided to reduce this year's release from Powell to Mead by 1.5 million acre feet. So that reduction alone implies roughly a 17-foot drop in Mead's elevation, which would put the lake below that 1,045-foot threshold. So I'm hoping that staff will address this. Have you modeled this scenario? And lastly, I'll be quick here, that there are also significant actions that will likely be required under the post-2026 framework. There's a whole slide on this. We're just wondering what the Bureau of Reclamation's current proposal actually says about California's allocation and potential cuts. What about IID allocation specifically, and how would these cuts impact our QSA supplies? There's also a mention of potential litigation on the table, and we just want to know if this will be thoroughly addressed by staff. We just want to know how these scenarios will impact our QSA supplies. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for those questions.
Mr. Chair.
Oh,
it's yes. Madaffer. Just based on a couple of her comments, it might not be a bad idea at some point that the committee give an update as to some of those issues, especially regarding Colorado River hydrology and those issues. I know we'll be talking about them today, but it is probably good for the public to get an understanding and also have a good understanding as to how well situated our region is compared to the rest of the basin. Thank you.
Okay. Great, thank you. Any other public comment?
That concludes our in-person.
All right, thank you.
If there are public speakers in the Zoom waiting room, please raise your hand through the Zoom app or press *9 if you are listening by phone. Chair, there are no speakers online.
Okay, thank you. Time for the chair's report. We have a few items to cover. On the exchange agreements, I'll begin today by thanking the representatives of the Eastern Municipal Water District and Met, who joined us for our special board meeting on April 9th. The signing of our second exchange agreement, this time with Eastern, is another step in the direction this board has outlined in how to manage our supplies, serve our ratepayers, and help others build resilience. I think from the discussions we had at ANF this morning, we can see how that is helping us move forward in our financial directions as well. The transfer with Eastern and our agreement with Western represent really just a beginning, and congratulations again to all of the efforts of the staff and the support and leadership of the board in moving us forward with these innovative approaches. Next, in line then, and part of that progression is the MOU for interstate transfers. And along those lines, I'm pleased to report that Metropolitan signed the Memorandum of Understanding we developed to work with the other states in reclamation to develop that framework for exploring those interstate transfers. You'll recall that the board authorized the MOU in February, and by having Met and other agencies who we anticipate will also sign the MOU, again, will be another step forward in creating this water marketplace that previously didn't exist. Moving to Colorado River, a topic that we just heard a couple of questions about and that we'll certainly work on addressing as much as necessary. The exchanges within California and the effort to develop interstate transfers take greater significance when we consider the dire conditions at the Colorado River. Today, staff will provide a report based on the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's release of its April 24th month study. April 24-month study, which will cover hydrology and also new actions Reclamation is considering this year in response to the declining hydrology. Staff will also provide an update on the post-2026 guideline discussions as Reclamation moves toward an anticipated summer decision that will determine the river's future management, since a consensus could not be reached among the various basin states. Turning a little bit east toward the Salton Sea, and I know a number of us went on a tour not too long ago to the Salton Sea, which for me was very informative, but I think for everyone else, about what's being done out there to conserve the Salton Sea. This month, Governor Newsom officially established the Salton Sea Conservancy, which he had previously signed into law following legislation introduced by Senator Padilla. The Conservancy's goal is to support the operation and maintenance of projects the state is building at the Salton Sea to advance restoration efforts. And those projects are really quite impressive. The Conservancy will focus on ensuring the long-term sustainability of projects like the 8,000-acre species conservation habitat, which again, some of us had a chance to see on a recent tour. This is a positive step for the sea, and staff will keep this board updated as the state continues its restoration efforts. There's also activity going on at the border. the U.S. International Boundary and Water Commission, which is an important agency, especially as we get wherever we get with respect to basin states and dealing with the allocations, which have to be addressed also with our neighbor to the south in Mexico. In addition to the development related to the commission, they have named a new deputy commissioner for public and congressional affairs. Deputy Commissioner Tony Fry joins the IBWC from the Federal Highway Administration at the U.S. Department of Transportation. The IBWC plays a pivotal role in working with Mexico on river issues, and we look forward to Deputy Commissioner Fry's leadership addressing the binational issues related to the river, and we all look forward to working with her. On the MWD side, as you've already heard, with a lot of leadership from our delegation, including Director Miller, who's the Finance Committee Chair at MWD, Metropolitan unanimously, and I think that's quite a feat for MWD to unanimously agree on anything, passed a budget last week that held rate increases to 6.2% in both 2027 and 2028. We'll hear more about both the budget and Pure Water California later in our committee. With the site's reservoir, the proposed project received its draft water right in March. The site's project is reviewing, authorities reviewing the decision and evaluating it. There's public comment due by May 22nd, and staff will provide more information when Metropolitan determines how those rights could affect participation in the project. So it's still moving forward, but for us, how MWD addresses it, that's going to be an important aspect to future reporting on that issue. And on last but not least, on the Delta Conveyance Project, I'll note that the Delta Stewardship Council is meeting today to consider and potentially adopt a decision on appeals challenging the Certificate of of Consistency. Reading through that, it appears that the preliminary read from that is that they have approved not approved most of the objections. There were a couple that they've addressed, but it looks like that's another process moving forward with respect to the Delta Conservancy project and the Delta Conveyance. And we will now move forward to director's comments. I guess I'll first ask if Vice Chair Katz or Vice Chair Madaffer have any comments. Okay. Any comments from directors in general regarding all of our imported water issues before we move on to presentations? Seeing none, there are no items on the consent calendar. We do have five items today. We'll start with the MWD delegates report, and first up is Director Fong Sakai.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'll be talking about the CIP approval. Last week, as part of its budget approval, the Metropolitan Board appropriated $875 million for its fiscal years 2027 and 28 capital investment program. In the original draft, staff had proposed a $950 million CIP, plus an additional $150 million to fund early implementation of Pure Water Southern California. Most of the board strongly supported MET focusing on maintenance of its aging infrastructure and agreed to compromise on funding the CIP at $875 million, which is still a more than $200 million increase over the last biennial budget. Regarding Pure Water in Southern California, Director Miller suggested funding it with a mix of reserves that will be used as matching funds to assess more federal grant funds. This proved to be a creative compromise that satisfied the board members who strongly supported Pure Water Southern California and those that supported lower rate impacts. The board has not yet voted to implement the program, but it will be evaluated as part of MET's Camp for Water program. And Metropolitan is still studying potential staging and other potential Pure Water program options, such as direct potable reuse. The delegates continue to urge Metropolitan to look at ways to find additional revenue work with its member agencies to maximize system efficiency and to evaluate projects and programs holistically. On a side note, I'll be hosting a metropolitan field trip with Director Brenda Denstadt from Western Water Municipal Water District next week to the Skinner Treatment Plant, Diamond Valley Lake, and Wadsworth Pumping Plant. Several of our board members and our staff will be attending. At this time, I'll toss it over to Director Katz, who will talk more about Pure Water Southern California, and Director Miller, who will say more about the budget. But first, I'll turn it over to Dan.
Thanks, Director Fong-Sakai. I'll be very brief. I just wanted to point out, aside from the budget and the CIP discussion, there was a very important item that Director Myers alluded to in the middle of it all, and that was the MOU that Metropolitan's GM signed and approved. They presented that to the board, and I provided some comments, just very thankful in general that it was considered by the GM and the board, and I think it was largely viewed as a step forward for the Colorado River. So that was a big deal for the Water Authority that day, aside from all the hard work that the rest of my delegation did on the budget. That's all.
Director Katz.
Yes, thank you. We spent a lot of time at the Met meeting, which was a two-day meeting, getting reports and talking about the state water project and also about the Colorado River and what's going on with the Colorado River. And you heard Chair Myers say how dire it is in the Colorado and the Colorado River. It really showed us when you saw these two reports from the State Water Project and the Colorado River that Metropolitan is going to be getting a lot less water. And with Metropolitan getting a lot less water, it means the entire region gets a lot less water. Now, we're very lucky here in San Diego because we have water and we have a reliable source of water. But this is really going to be a big discussion in the future about Metropolitan and about the region and the shortage of water. So it really put a lot of emphasis when we were talking about budget and making decisions on the budget about Pure Water and how to continue to fund it in the next 2 years to continue studying it and doing the planning. But we're not going to be doing any construction. So the key on Pure Water is that it is going to go through the Camp for Water process. And when it goes through the Camp for Water process, they have promised us by the end of this year that we will come out with the recommendation from Camp for Water and that the board, based on a lot more information, will actually take a vote of go or no go on Pure Water. But the beauty of Pure Water is that it is a source of creating our own source of water. And that's a really important thing, especially when you look at the Colorado, the State Water Project, et cetera. So it's going to be a very interesting discussion going forward. So it will be a go, no go by the end of this year when we get a lot more information, and then we will be able to make an informed vote by the board on Pure Water and whether or not to phase it in or go the full 150 versus the 45. It's now me, I'm going to be turning this over to Marty Miller. And I want to just talk a little bit about Marty Miller before I throw it over to him. Number one, Tuesday, 2 days ago, he had a brand new hip put in. He is now a bionic man. And he is going to be talking to us from home, but only 2 days out of surgery. So we call him Mod because it's really Marty on drugs. So you are going to see a nicer, gentler Marty Miller today than you normally see. So get ready for that. But before I turn it over to Marty, he almost looks like he's falling asleep there. Marty, you got everyone would be so proud of Marty Miller and what he did at Metropolitan at the last board meeting and leading up to the last board meeting. The guy was a statesman. The plan that we looked at for the budget was a plan that Marty came up with. Everyone called it the Miller Plan. and at the last minute came up with this great compromise on pure water. So it made everyone happy. Instead of a 9.5% rate increase, we ended up with a 6.2% increase because of Marty Miller. And the board voted in committee and in the full board unanimously, which doesn't happen at Met. So really, congratulations to Marty, the new statesman for Metropolitan and the new bionic man. And I'll turn it over to Marty Miller.
Thanks, Mel. You're pretty kind. And the drugs I'm taking are just basically Tylenol, so I'm not all amped up or in a coma. So I can give my report. So as Director Fonsakai said, Met adopted the budget with a 6.2% rate increase in both calendar years, which is a 35% reduction from Met's original proposal of 9.5. With our leadership, we kept the additional staff to 79 positions, which is less than the 105 than Met originally proposed. And we fended off many attempts to raise that to more positions. Many board members advocated for increasing Met's fixed revenue by increasing the ad valorem tax from 0.007 to 0.015, which was a 3.5 rate increase. We moved a little bit on it in the presentation to 1.85 because there was a large contingent that wanted to move it higher to get them on board and throw them a bone, so to speak, because we recognize the significant costs on the state water project. When I first proposed 1.85, I tried to tie it to the state water project subsidence issues to use it as a savings account. And I was told by legal we couldn't do that. But in order to get everybody to sign on, I left it alone and moved on. It equates to about $15 per year for every $1 million of value on homes and commercial property, which is going to be about $11 million in costs for the county a year in taxes. But we all have to remember that's not all on the residents. We've got a significant amount of commercial properties that use very little water that will be contributing to that property tax increase. Metropolitan will continue to fund conservation at 30.5. Originally, I proposed holding it at grants only, which would have saved about $7 to $10 million. But we gave in on that in order to get some consensus from the conservation people, with the caveat that they have to reassess the conservation program and reevaluate where we're going and what we're doing with it. Also on the LRP funding, we proposed stopping all new applications and new funding, but honoring all existing agreements and existing applications. And again, the caveat is that we reassess the LRP program, which is 25 years old and has been very successful at producing water, but it's also 25 years old and needs to be reevaluated because the landscape today is far different than it was in the first decade of this century. So we're going to have that evaluation. Met has already started the evaluation with us, with the member agency general managers, as part of its business model review for the Camp for Water process. Finally, as part of the budget deal, Met will conduct a market study for the sale of two of its four islands in the Delta, which is one of my pet projects from about 2 years ago, was to figure out what to do with those black holes we have up there. And so that was approved in this budget, which was a milestone. On the pure water, they talked about getting creative, and we just talked with Pierce about accounts and how you put money in different accounts. My original idea was to take an account that I thought we had for the DCP money that we got reimbursed, was to borrow that money to pay for the added money for pure water, and then repay it off the property tax increases that would be underestimated. The overage would come in from underestimating, and repay the DCP account. And I was informed, just like we were today, that all of the monies that they have in excess go into the reserve account. So legal came up with jargon at the last minute to where I could make the proposal to do a one-time draw from reserves of $58 million to fund the added cost of pure water to get the remaining grants to get it to the $150 million with funding without increasing the rates by 0.5% a year. And it was a similar thing, like I just said, that we just talked about with Pierce, that they do not have separate accounts. It all goes into reserves, so it had to come out of reserves. Overall, we were able to get what can be a contentious decision to a smooth finish with the unanimous agreement. Everybody got a little of what they wanted, and everybody probably left the room a little unhappy, but they are all in that position. So, as I said many times, when everybody's unhappy, it's probably a really good deal. But there really wasn't anybody with their mouth turned down. I thought it came out real well. I spent a lot of time on it. It's the most interesting 3 weeks I've had since I've been on the Water Authority and the Met Board as the leader of the process. I was negotiated with a lot, took a lot of pressure from the politicians to fund pure water. Chair Ortega was under a lot of pressure from outside politicians to keep pure water alive. So we found a way to do it. And I also want to thank Mina and Alex. Once I made the presentation, Mina and Alex were the ones, along with Dan, talking to all the general managers, trying to get everybody on board. And they were a big part of why we were successful. And lastly, I want to say, what a remarkable change in the way we do business with Metropolitan. 5-10 years ago, San Diego was a pariah, and whatever we proposed was shot down immediately. And now to this week, San Diego was the leader in establishing the budget for Metropolitan, which is a remarkable change in attitude and atmosphere. So thank you. That's my report.
Great. Thank you, Director Miller. Next, we will have Director Fong Sakai.
Thank you. I'd just like to add on to that. In all the time that I've been on the board of directors at Metropolitan Water District, this is the earliest that the board has ever come together on a budget. This is the earliest that we've reached consensus this quickly. And a lot of it is because of the hard work of Mina Westford, Alex Heidi, our general manager, Denham, and Marty Miller. They did all of the heavy lifting here, and we owe a great deal of gratitude to all of them for everything that they did to make this deal come together.
Thank you. Director Robach.
So Marty, I have a question for you. Regarding Pure Water Southern California, which doesn't pencil out, and we've had that discussion many times. When you were giving your report, you were talking about all the political pressure that was being exerted on about that project. And water affordability is front and center on everything right now. So if we have a project that's uber expensive, that doesn't really pencil out, why is there political pressure to keep moving it forward? I don't understand.
Well, I think the political pressure is coming from the situation on the Colorado River indirectly, with the Colorado River in such stress and obvious cuts coming. The political pressure is basically saying, with all that river problems, why would you not be pursuing covering your butt by going out and creating new water in your area? Politicians are politicians. The pure water, what we did, and I didn't say this or nobody said this, is one of the caveats we put into our proposal was that pure water had to go through Camp for Water by the end of the year and not keep getting pushed down the line. in part, and one of the benefits of the proposal that I came up with was the $58 million that they are going to pull out of reserves to complete the funding does not happen until after we make the decision from through Camp for Water whether we're going to have a project or not. So that money won't be spent until we've made the decision. And if we say, no, we're not going to build it, then that money won't get spent. And if we say we are going to get, are going to approve it, then that money would get spent anyway. So right now it's good. That money is in reserve waiting for that decision. I don't think there's a lot of support with when you talk about rates on what they're projecting the cost of the water to be. I don't think there's a huge support for the project. I shouldn't say a huge support. I would say that there's a middling support for the project and just as much to stop it and put it on the shelf and slow it down from several agencies. That's why we originally proposed only funding it with the grant, what was necessary for the grant funding initially. But it's all reaction to the political pressure is all reaction from the dire straits on the Colorado River. And one of the things that I've complained about at Met is that we have a public relations department that has been in the whole southern part of the state talking about pure water as if it's a done deal. And we, this delegation, not just me, but Lois and others before me, have been trying to get this thing over the line and make a decision on it sooner rather than later and put it to bed or to build it or to agree to build it for the last 2 or 3 years. And we are just now getting to that point where we can make the decision. And the whole part of the budget was making sure that we made that decision by the end of the year, in which case we wouldn't spend all the money that they have. So the price is a concern at $5,000 an acre foot, today's money, probably will be seven in 34 money, is a concern. And I don't think there's going to be support to push it through, but that's just my opinion.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to a presentation on the Met budget and rates. I'm going to turn this over to Imported Water Director Mina Westford to introduce the item and staff.
Thank you. As you've heard from the delegates, there's been a lot that has been happening building up to this budget, many inputs and many different iterations. But what matters the most is that we delivered responsible outcomes for our ratepayers. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Alex Heide, our Principal Water Resources Specialist, to take us briefly through those details since you've heard a lot about it a lot. And I just want to mention, thank you, Director Fong Sakai and Miller for the acknowledgement. I want to also thank Emily Novak and Sophia Almedia who helps us put those analysis together. So thank them too.
Thank you, Mina, and good morning, Chair Myers and members of the committee and board. I think as you've heard from the delegates who covered it well, Metropolitan adopted their budget last week. I'm not going to go through a lengthy presentation. I think we could have 50 slides on this and still not cover all of it. So we'll try and cover it in one. Hopefully that keeps it a little bit briefer. As the delegates covered it, you heard the essentials. Metropolitan passed a budget that held rates at 6.2%. It trimmed staffing from the original 105 FTEs that they proposed to 79, while increasing the ad valorem property tax from 0.007% to 0.0085%. Additionally, the budget funds conservation, all while we evaluate Metropolitan's local resources program and do a study to evaluate the sale of two of Metropolitan's Bay Delta Islands. As you heard, the budget was passed unanimously. One of the things I want to underscore is why this proposal is important to the Water Authority. And that was really highlighted by, I think, our delegates' report, which was the Water Authority's new relationship with Metropolitan and the member agencies working cooperatively and collaboratively on a proposal that was supported unanimously. Credit to Director Miller and our delegates for centering investments on repair and rehabilitation through an increased CIP Metropolitan has historically not met their targets on investment in their existing system. So this will put an additional $200 million toward R&R work. And additionally, with our delegate support, we crafted a proposal that took a reserves-funded approach toward Pure Water Southern California, so we can continue to maintain our federal grant on that project while ensuring that the project continues to move through the Camp for Water process. I also want to highlight that this budget really prioritizes predictability and stability at Metropolitan. Historically, Metropolitan has adopted a 10-year rate projection that has a much lower number, and then they'll come out with their budget proposal with a much higher number. And that provides, you know, they have a whole bunch of wholesale and retail agencies that they serve, and that provides a lot of uncertainty when you're planning for something less and it comes in at something higher. We've experienced that here at the Water Authority. Adopting a rate increase that's much more in line with their 10-year rate projection really helps to provide that stability and that predictability that their member agencies rely on, and moves it to a much more fiscally sustainable approach. Third, I want to just highlight that on the Pure Water Southern California, with Metropolitan committing funds to match those grants, the adopted proposal also maintains an approach where all the information comes before the Metropolitan Board before they have to commit that funding, so that they're not pulling money out of reserves to fund the project without it going through the appropriate process. I think the bottom line and the takeaway here is that Metropolitan's budget is a step toward a more resilient system and a more predictable financial runway. And the Water Authority had a substantial hand in crafting that approach. And it really, you know, a lot of credit goes to the Water Authority's delegates for helping shepherd this through. With that, that concludes my presentation, and happy to answer any questions.
All right, seeing no questions, we'll move to the presentation now on Pure Water Southern California, an update. I'll again turn it over to Mina and to introduce the item and the staff.
I'm going to leave Alex up here. I think he's going to be giving you a brief update on the Pure Water Southern California program. And to Director Roebuck's question, it does... we are asking the questions about cost, timing, and the necessity of this project. So I'll turn it over to Alex so that we can better understand these issues as we approach that decision point at the end of the year.
So the theme of today is budget and Pure Water, as we've covered a couple times. So Pure Water Southern California, this is one of the major investments that you've heard brought up at the Water Authority Board a couple times, as one of those projects that helps Metropolitan meet its reliability goals, but also is a significant investment in Metropolitan's overall portfolio to bring about that reliability. This presentation is going to provide an update of where Metropolitan's at to date, where the project's kind of historically been, and what its next steps are in the future ahead of Metropolitan making investment decisions, as Director Katz mentioned in the delegates report. So understanding kind of the evolution of Pure Water Southern California, the program was originally conceptualized in 2010. It's been through a series of iterations. Important milestones are in 2017, they built a pilot plant in Carson. The pilot plant, which I'm sure many of you have probably toured, is co-located at the LA County Sanitation District's facility there in Carson. That's also where the full-scale plant would be constructed before they build the pipelines to convey that water. In 2025, Metropolitan looked at staging the project. Originally, the program was conceptualized to be a 150 MGD project that developed recycled water, mainly for groundwater recharge. Based off comments from the board, mainly looking at cost considerations, the board asked whether that project could be scaled in a couple different ways. Out of that process came some different options for scaling the project. Starting at a 45 MGD project, there could be a second phase at 75 MGD, and then a final phase at the full 150, with a portion of that water being raw water augmentation at the Weymouth plant. Then in 2026, earlier this year in February, the Metropolitan Board certified the final environmental impact report as part of the Pure Water Program. And that EIR looked at only the 150 MGD project. It did not look at any of the staging options. Just to give an overview of what the program looks like, this is a map of the Metropolitan Service Area. At the bottom left-hand portion of the screen, you can see the Advanced Water Purification Facility that's co-located there at LA County Sanitation District's property. The blue line running up the middle of that roughly parallels the San Gabriel River, and it's 39 miles of large diameter pipeline that would convey the water, mainly along a pathway that allows it to recharge groundwater basins. So this water would be predominantly used for groundwater recharge in the West Basin, Central Basin, Rio Hondo, and Main San Gabriel Basin spreading grounds. Then there's a orange line that conveys the water from that last leg up at the top of the screen over to the Weymouth plant. Roughly 35 MGD of the water would be used for raw water augmentation for indirect potable reuse. And that's kind of the project in a nutshell of what it's been envisioned as today. Some of the benefits of the project, you can see here reliability. The project would 150 MGD roughly equates to 168,000 acre feet of new water supply for the region, locally controlled, which provides Met with a lot of certainty. The project is scalable to some degree. You'll see those scale comes with cost, but you can look at a range of different project outcomes that help it to better align with demands as the Metropolitan needs that project to scale online. That's the 45, 75, 115. Then partnerships, of course, Metropolitan's looking at a number of different partnerships. They've signed letters of intent with several different agencies, both with their own member agencies to make sure that they have demand for the project, but then also Colorado River parties, Southern Nevada Water Authority, and Arizona DWR, looking at the potential to exchange this water through interstate transfers. And they're also looking at, of course, a significant investment from LA County Sanitation Districts, who would see some benefits on the wastewater side, similar to other advanced treated recycled water projects. And then lastly, multi-benefit, I don't think this goes without saying, but you're developing a water supply, you're also reducing wastewater discharge, and they're looking at some community benefits along the pipeline pathway that they could invest in as well. When you look at evaluating this project, I think it's important to keep in mind Metropolitan scenario planning. This goes back to their IRP needs assessment, where they outlined the four scenarios. We've done a couple presentations on what those four scenarios look like. This just outlines here, Pure Water Southern California is considered a new core supply. So it would develop 168,000 acre feet every year, whether you know, wet, dry, or normal year. What you can see under the scenarios, the scenario A, B, C, and D, with scenario D being the highest need for new core supplies, is Pure Water would offset that last column. So under scenario A, Metropolitan doesn't need to develop any new core supply. Under scenario B, 150,000 acre feet of new core supply. And then, you know, ranging all the way up to scenario D, where they need up to 650,000 acre feet of new core supply. So Pure Water would help offset the need in that column. You know, part of it, and part of one of the water authority's concerns, is just lining up what that the need for the project is with what the project's actually delivering. So if we're in scenario A, where we don't necessarily need to develop any new core supply, but you develop a project at 168,000 acre feet, you know, you have a little bit of a mismatch there. So you have to figure out how to best line the project up with what your actual needs are. That's why it's important for Metropolitan to continue evaluating where they're at, where their demands are at, and overlining those with the projects that they're looking at running through their Camp for Water process. And this is something that they'll look at in quite substantive detail as part of their Camp for Water process. What you can look at taking away that scenario planning and moving into how the project actually helps to meet those needs is under scenario C, Pure Water reduces the risk of shortage in 2045 by 75%. So you can see without a project, Metropolitan's entering shortage about 8% of the time. With Pure Water, they enter shortage about 2% of the time. So that's a 75% risk reduction under scenario C. Under scenario D, it's a 22% reduction. So they're seeing significant shortages, mainly from increased demands and lower supplies. Pure Water helps to reduce that risk, but 22%. I do think it's important to know, and we've noted during previous camp presentations, that scenarios A and B were not evaluated as part of this analysis because those two scenarios don't take into account RCP 8.5, which is Metropolitan's policy to look at scenarios that only include higher climate change projections. As was asked earlier by Director Robach, Metropolitan did put out updated cost analysis in 2025 on the different staging options and what the unit cost is for those staging options. So you can see this is a matrix of those costs. I'm not going to go through them in great detail, but what you can see there at the very bottom is a full program staged, which is where the board is considering at the moment. Total program costs are $12.3 billion. Metropolitan share of those costs are $10.6 billion. The other portion of it is covered by LA County Sanitation Districts. The point in time unit cost is $5,500 an acre foot. If you spread those over the life cycle, it's about $2,900 an acre foot. But that results in an overall melded cost increase because they wouldn't charge off-takers of the water that unit price. They would blend it into the overall rates for the entire region who takes Metropolitan water. That would be a roughly 50% increase in the overall costs. I do think it's important to keep in mind on that life cycle costs, they are based off an estimated 100-year asset life, which, you know, it's a long time. So just keep that in mind. Those, depending on some of these assumptions, because you're spreading it over such a long period, changes in that assumption make a huge difference in your overall unit cost, which points to some overall concerns. As Director Katz noted, as part of the budget process, Metropolitan did commit to running this project through the Camp for Water process by the end of 2026. Just a reminder, Camp for Water is Metropolitan's decision-making process. It's how they line up their project investments with their overall need and evaluative criteria. This process hasn't been used for any of the major projects under consideration. Pure would be the first through it. And Metropolitan should look at putting it through the different scenarios, scenario A, B, C, and D, to make sure that this is still a low regrets investment. And they should look at this in conjunction with their other investments, sites and DCP, so that, you know, they can maintain the lowest cost options to be able to meet their needs. And this process will culminate at the end of 2026. Projects under evaluation, we just thought it was important to note here, Pure Water is not the only project that's under evaluation by Metropolitan to help meet their overall needs. On here on the slides, what you can see is the three main projects that Metropolitan's looking at investing in: sites, the Delta sites reservoir, which is a large storage reservoir north of the Delta Conveyance Project, and of course, Pure Water Southern California. These are Metropolitan's share of the project costs. They're not the total project costs. The total project costs are quite a bit higher. Metropolitan, in all cases, only takes on a their proportional share of costs. So this is Metropolitan share of sites, Metropolitan share of DCP, and their share of Pure Water Southern California. So next steps, and as you've heard, as part of Metropolitan's budget actions, they're going to put this through camp. In May of this year, they are planning on bringing forward a staging plan to look at what staging options the board should be considering as part of implementation. Then also in May, they're going to be looking at Camp for Water assessments and also share some of the low regrets recommendations that staff has developed as part of the Camp for Water process. And then at the end of 2026, the Metropolitan Board will look at a decision to implement a staged approach, which will put us down a particular path. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and happy to...
Director Kirschbaum.
Thank you, Chair. So I had a question. The RCP 8.5 came up on slide 21. So my question is for really any of the Met delegates. The RCP 8.5 is like a mandate to only evaluate the most extreme projections for climate change. So I'm just wondering, like, how bound is the board to use those projections? And what is your opinion as a Met delegate on using that for your decision making on big projects like this?
Anyone? Yeah, I personally using it is not necessarily my criteria. I think that this, along with affordability, it should be balanced. I don't think that you plan anything to RCP 8.5 as an extreme. That's of course this delegate's opinion. You know, there's a lot of other comments I can make on Pure Water Southern California, but I think that'll all play out in the Camp for Water process. I'll leave it there.
So, and just some background too on RCP 8.5, because this is kind of the first I've heard of it. So is that more of just like a guiding agreement, or is the board saying, no, as a board, we're only going to look at, like, in this situation, it would only be scenario C and D? Or do you have the flexibility to say, like, no, let's look at affordability. It's, you know, low percentage that will be in this extreme climate condition. So what are our options?
Yeah, I think that the Camp for Water process has a great amount of flexibility built into it. So although it's sort of framed, of course, by the title alone as climate adaption, affordability is front and center in all of this. And I will tell you that it's, you know, as I think Director Miller indicated in his comments earlier, the board is largely split on this as to where it lands. What's happening on the Colorado River is front and center. I'll remind this board and everyone else that this project's only producing 45 MGD worth of water, and it's not new water. It'll be water that's consumed within Southern California. So as it's framed as the savior to the river, I would say not necessarily, but it is something that's needed. Is it needed today, or is it needed long-term? I think that's the criteria, and I wouldn't balance it off of RCP 8.5. It's more what can we all afford and when do we need it?
Yeah, I might just add one thing that while there is some flexibility in what staff evaluates, the current board policy is to only look at scenarios with RCP 8.5. So that would limit it to scenario C and scenario D. For there to be any deviation from that policy, the board would need to tell staff they want to see all four scenarios. And that's one of the things that in particular, when you go back to this slide here, when you limit it only to scenario C and scenario D, you're only looking at half the picture. The point of the scenario planning was to look at low regress options with, you know, the other two scenarios forming the other half of the picture. So, you know, we feel it's important to look at all four scenarios, not limiting it to just the RCP 8.5 scenarios.
Thank you. Director Heideman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the whole Camp for Water is just a fascinating comp. We've been hearing about this since Director Goldberg was leading the group. And, you know, when you say they're going to start the Camp for Water, in calendar year 2026? What is that? When does it end? It goes in, but how long is that process going to take? And it just seems to me that in your timeline, you showed this idea started in 2010, and here we are 15 years later, and it's now starting in this really complex process. Meanwhile, we're just spending money on design and consultants. And then your point, Alex, about, you know, the life cycle costs using 100 years, that's just ridiculous, right? So it just seems like, I don't know, it's fun to watch, but it's kind of scary to think about.
Yeah, I think those are all good questions. And I think we're also interested in seeing what the process looks like. Ultimately, what we're hopeful for is that this process provides the information for the board to make an informed decision. And I think if it comes out with information for the board to make a well-informed decision, we'll consider it a success. The challenge is taking something that's ultimately very complicated and using it to provide valuable information for the board to say, yes, we want to continue maintaining this as an investment decision. It's not entirely clear what that looks like just yet, but we should start getting some clarity into that here in a couple months.
So in your opinion, is there a time when there's a go or no go decision?
That's what I don't know if that was initially anticipated as part of the CAMP process, but it's now a board directive as part of the budget that there is a go, no go decision on Pure Water by the end of 2026, because they will say, yes, we want to implement Pure Water at a particular stage at the end of 2020, by the end of 2026.
All right, Director Kirschbaum.
Thank you. I just want to add, so there's comments about making sure the board has enough information to make a well-informed decision. Again, going back to this RCP 8.5, if staff is only presenting on the most extreme scenarios and the board doesn't have information in a holistic way, I think that's, guiding the board to a decision that staff wants, and it's just not looking at realistic scenarios. So just as I'm not a delegate, I'm not a member of that board, but just as a citizen and taxpayer, that seems like a scary type, scary decision and not enough information. So that's all.
I'll just add that you're not alone with that sentiment. And we'll be asking for a thorough look of this when it goes through CAMP for water.
Okay. We have Chair Emeritus Director Delegate Katz.
Thanks. Alex, how much water does Metropolitan get from the Colorado right now?
Roughly about a million acre feet. They have a base apportionment of 550,000 plus. They have programs that they operate to get them up to a full aqueduct.
And they're pretty low on the priority list. When you look at the seven basin states, you look at IID, et cetera, Metropolitan is pretty low as far as reliability on the Colorado.
Yeah, I'll defer to our director.
That's not quite right. They are the lowest priority in the state of California, but California still maintains the most senior rights on the river.
So when you look at Colorado and you look at Lake Powell and you look at Lake Mead and you look at how low they are right now, and when they come out with some edicts on what the cuts are going to be, Metropolitan has a huge risk in losing a lot of water. And I would think that we would want to take a look at that chart that's on the screen right there and put in things about Colorado and where that looks like. When we have talked about these different scenarios up there, it was not with the dire lookout outlook for Colorado River. So between that and between the low snowpack, et cetera, affordability is great, but it is also great to be able to turn your tap and get water. And reliability is also a really important thing. So all of that has to go into looking at where we are as far as what we're going to need in the future for this region.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, and that's part of why we want to look at the full range of potential scenarios. That way the board can make an informed decision, including, I think, as you know, issues on the Colorado River, issues on the state water project, but also looking at, you know, other project investments Metropolitan can make. That way the board has the full range of information to make a decision, and why the Camp for Water process is important.
These scenarios that we've been looking at were done without putting into any the risks for Colorado.
I don't think that that's right. They have assumed that Metropolitan loses in some form its basic annual apportionment of 550 on the river. That's the full cut of 550, but then they backed it back up to account for health and human safety water at MWD at about 200 or so thousand acre feet. So that at least is accounted for about a 250,000 acre foot cut, not the whole Met million.
Okay.
Through the aqueduct.
250,000 acre feet. If we go with Pure at the full bounty, we're looking at 168,000. We're still short from the Colorado. It is something that needs to be looked at as far as the scenarios going forward and what the demand is going to be.
May I?
Yes. Yes, you may.
So I agree with you, Director Katz. I think the biggest...
Stop there.
No, I think I'm going to give a little bit more. I agree with the situation on the Colorado River, right? I've lived through this my entire career. There will be cuts coming to Metropolitan. What's really difficult for me to stomach is that you have a project that's in the billions of dollars that's spread across every agency in Southern California. Three benefit from it: the recycling component, the portion of what they're paying into the project is very small, and we're relying on Southern Nevada and Arizona to buy in at a cost that arguably is greater than $7,000 an acre foot. So the financial component has to be viewed in all of that, is in my view. Thank you, sir.
All right, I will issue my opinion later on this. Director Fong Sakai.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to add that as part of the budget process, that one of the things that we had discussed earlier was the need to have Pure Water go through the Camp for Water process. But I've also asked that we evaluate Pure Water holistically with all of the other projects that are on the table, including Delta Conveyance and Sites Reservoir, and that we need to collaborate with all of the other agencies on the projects they have planned, as well as the LRP projects. Because at this point, there's not a complete collaboration between all of the different agencies. So I still want to see where the gaps are as far as our demand and what we have. Is there overlap? What are the costs? How much can we afford? What can we actually sell? And there's still a lot of questions that we have not yet received the answers to, but I'm hoping that we will get those this fall so that we can make a true decision and the best decision for all of us, and not just try to evaluate each project on its own, because we need to do them all together. Our budgets and what we pay for water, they all need to come together.
Thank you. Director Miller has his hand up.
Yes, thank you. What we need to keep in mind at this point is there's that old saying, never let a disaster go to waste. The Colorado River is bordering on being a disaster that's controlled totally by Mother Nature, that could change at any year, any cycle. Right now, we've got 4 million acre feet of water and storage at Met. We've got a 35% allocation from the Delta, which will bring in 700,000 acre feet. Met is only going to sell about a million acre feet. So that's 300,000 acre foot shortfall that relies on the river. If we only get half of our water off the river at 250, we'd have to take 50 or 100,000 acre feet of water out of storage was all we'd have to take, and we're good to go. So one of the ideas on pure water is just to slow it down. Maybe we approved to do it, but we approved to do it on a slow walk while we watch and see what hydrology does along the lines. It's not like we're in an emergency right now because we have the water we need. There's enough water in storage to provide every drop of water for 2 years for the Met program if we got nothing. And then the figures on what we get from the river, the million acre feet, got to remember that Met considers the water we get as their water before we get it. So that's in that, and that's priority one water, the water IID gets. Also, Met can get over 100,000 acre feet from PVID, which is also a senior rights holder on the river. So while there may be a haircut forthcoming, it's going to be a modest haircut that we can weather. Now, obviously, if the Delta provided us zero like it did back in 22, we've got a different situation. But that's only happened once in the history of Metropolitan. More normal years run into 30 to 40% allocations. So before we panic and build a $12 billion water facility, we need to realize that this is, we need to look really far out to see what we're really doing here. And the last facet is what Lois von Sakai just said. We have funded LRP projects out there, and there are one third of them that are not running at capacity or at full efficiency. Why would we build a $5,500 an acre foot plant when we've already funded plants that are producing water at, say, $3,000, but are not producing at full capacity because they want to save money? If we had those running at full capacity, would they generate 45 million gallons a day extra or 100 million gallons a day extra? That's why we've asked to reevaluate the LRP program to see if we're getting our bang for the buck out of those before we wander off into the billions of dollars in the new pure water plant. We've argued over the C and D since we started this process. And I don't know there's anybody in the boardroom that thinks scenario D is what we should be talking about. We're more along the lines of the scenario C when we look at the charts, because right now we're in a scenario A process. And unless we start getting some growth and rebound in sales, D is really in fantasy land. C is, and so that's where we're all thinking on the board is that D's out of the question and C is the only thing that really makes any sense, if you can make sense out of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else on the queue, thank you very much for the presentation. Incredibly informative and interesting. So thank you, everyone, for your comments. Next, speaking of the Colorado River, we are going to have a hydrology and basin states update. I will again turn it over to Mina Westford to introduce the item and the staff.
Well, as you've heard many times today, the Colorado River remains one of the most stressed and most important water systems in the country. Today's update will help set the stage for why flexibility, partnerships, and forward-looking decisions are essential. I'll turn it over to Dennis Davis, our senior water resource specialist, who will walk us through the latest hydrology and what we're seeing across the basin today.
Thank you, Mina. We can advance the next slide. The Colorado River sustains 40 million people across seven states, 30 tribes, and parts of Mexico. And for the San Diego region, conserved river water accounts for more than half of our supply. But the river has been under stress from prolonged drought and rising temperatures. And hydrologic conditions this year are breaking all the wrong records. But before I dive into the details, it's important to note, one, California water users are not expected to face mandatory reductions this year. And two, if reductions are required next year, the Water Authority's conserved river supplies are supported by high priority rights that provide added reliability and help shield our region from potential cuts. Next slide. So you have likely heard about the record March heat wave that caused snowpack levels in the Rocky Mountains to fall to record lows. And we care about the snowpack here because it feeds the Colorado River. The end of February snowpack was already below normal. By late March, snowpack levels declined to roughly 20% of normal. The early snowmelt runoff was largely absorbed by dry soils or loss of evaporation instead of flowing into the river. And the Bureau of Reclamation now projects that 3 million acre feet will flow into Lake Powell this water year, which is 31% of the volume that historically flows into Powell. Next slide. Here I have a snapshot of water year 2026 hydrology. Reclamation reported that total river storage was at 36% of capacity, tracking the lows that we saw in 2022 when Reclamation called for immediate action to protect the river system. As of April 15th, Lake Mead is 32% full and over 100 feet above Mead's minimum power pool, but Mead infrastructure constraints will cause hydropower generation to decline significantly if Mead reaches elevation 1035. And we're currently 24 feet above that elevation. Lake Powell is 24% full and 36 feet above Powell's minimum power pool. And under the driest conditions, Powell is projected to fall below its minimum power pool by August. Next slide. So here I have an image showing the back of Glen Canyon Dam. And this was taken around the time Mead was first being filled, back in the 60s and 70s. And I just want to draw your attention to that purple line there. That's meant to depict the minimum power pool elevation for Lake Powell. And there are 8 penstocks below it. So when the water level drops too low, there isn't enough water that's sitting above the dam's turbines to generate the pressure needed to spin them and generate electricity. So Reclamation would have to stop sending water through the dam using those penstocks, and instead would have to rely on the river outlets here on the left. Again, Powell today is only 36 feet above that critical elevation for the minimum power pool. And this is fresh off the press. Effective today, Reclamation is taking near-term actions. There was a potential that they're making a decision, but now we have confirmation that they will be taking action this month to protect power generation at Powell. So next slide. So the first action, so no longer proposed, first action is to release water into Powell from upstream reservoirs that will range between 660,000 acre feet and 1 million acre feet. The series of releases will occur over 1 year and should finish in April of 2027. The second action is to cut the scheduled Powell to Mead release from 7.48 million acre feet to 6 million acre feet. This release reduction will continue through September. And combined, these actions will add 2.48 million acre feet in Powell, lifting its elevation about 50 feet to hopefully keep Powell above its minimum power pool. But of course, there are trade-offs. Mead's decline will accelerate and potentially stifle Hoover's power generation as early as September under the driest conditions. And Hoover Dam, of course, powers Metropolitan's Colorado River Aqueduct pumping plants. And Metropolitan earlier this year noted that loss in Hoover power could raise energy costs of moving water through it. The other trade-off is an increased risk for the lower basin to make a compact call on the river, since a 6 million acre foot Powell release would reduce the 10-year flow at Lee Ferry, which is located just downstream of Powell. Next slide. So as I stated at the onset, no mandatory cuts are expected for California or the Water Authority this year. The lower basin remains in a level one shortage condition for 2026, under which the total combined shortage reductions and contributions for Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico are set at 613,000 acre feet. And these were locked in last August under the rules that expired at the end of 2025. But of course, our concern here more is what may come in water year 2027. There's a lot of uncertainty there as to what reduced Powell release means for Mead and how we'll start the next water year, which will likely be at a very low elevation in Mead. Next slide. So I'll wrap up here with an update on the post-2026 negotiations. Reclamation in the basin states continue to signal that a consensus agreement is the preferred path forward, but current conditions may soon force difficult decisions for water year 2027 operations. The new guidelines must be in place by the start of water year 2027, and without a consensus deal, reclamation could unilaterally select an operational framework that restricts flexibility and increases litigation risk. After the basin states missed the February deadline to submit a consensus proposal, reclamation emphasized that it will continue to work with the states to identify shared solutions and to reduce litigation risk. But it also made clear that it cannot delay action on the post-2026 guidelines. So reclamation is advancing its EIS process, its environmental impact statement process, to stay on schedule. The public comment period for the EIS closed on March 2nd, and the Water Authority and its member agencies submitted comment letters that were among those that were submitted to reclamation, which now reclamation is evaluating and preparing a final EIS that responds to the issues that were raised. The final EIS and record of decision are expected this summer. And there remains a great deal of uncertainty surrounding water year 2027 operations, since we do not yet know what will guide those operations. But what is clear is that current conditions are expected to complicate implementation of any post-2026 framework. And significant actions may be required in the basin as early as water year 2027 to stabilize reservoir storage. So while the Water Authority supports a basin-wide consensus framework that maintains operational flexibility and enables intra and interstate water transactions, we also recognize that we cannot solely rely on the post-2026 process. And we are moving forward on parallel tracks to secure the tools needed to strengthen affordability and provide rate stability for San Diego ratepayers. And that concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you, Councillor. And we will, seeing no questions in the queue, we will move to our, I see Director Arand.
Yeah, there's an article on our clip sheet, the Water Authority clip sheet, about the city of Scottsdale, which is a suburb area of Phoenix. And evidently under contractual obligations or contractual conditions with the city of Phoenix, they're facing a 70% cut in their Colorado River water. And they are focusing on diversifying their portfolios. So it's happening. It's happening.
I'll just add to that that the Texas cities are having similar problems, and they're bemoaning the fact that they didn't work on doing the same thing about 15 years ago themselves. So it's something for us to remember when we go through the angst of some of the issues that we have here. I see Director Robach.
So Dennis, you when I think of a Deadpool, I'm usually thinking of accessing water, but you had mentioned about, of course, power generation as well. We know that. And there's the Glen Canyon and Hoover. And so starting with Hoover, does Met own all of the power generation capability at Hoover?
No, Met has a good chunk of the power. I think they're the largest power contractor for Hoover, so they do get a big chunk, but they're not the only ones.
So the aqueduct is primarily powered off of that.
They receive I believe around 25% of the energy that they get from Hoover is used for powering the CRA, and then the rest of it they get or about 50% they get from Parker Dam. So those are the big two contributions. There's energy produced at Parker, energy produced at Hoover, and then power they get off the market as well, other sources, but those are the two main sources.
So when you were talking about them having to access in a worst case scenario open rate costs, is that substantially more?
So they looked earlier this year, they did an analysis. So they were, trying to figure out, because they're obviously concerned about this as well, right? And what they were looking at is a couple of scenarios. So it depends on the pumping, you know, that they're planning to do, whether it be low, mid, or high pumping on the CRA, because that will influence the cost. And they had some projections on what the cost could be. And if you're looking kind of the middle of the road projections, I want to say it was around $100 million is what they were looking at for 2027, as far as if they lose Hoover Power and they needed to replace it, how much would it cost? And they were in that kind of range in the middle of the road. But, and that's definitely above their 5-year historical average, which is around like $80 million. That's about their 5-year average. So they are a little bit higher than what they normally would be on a 5-year average. But they are looking at ways to mitigate the cost. So they have some short-term recommendations, some midterm recommendations. They're going to go back to the MWD board and suggest so they can mitigate the impact.
And who owns the Glen Canyon hydropower?
That goes through the Western Area Power Association. They sell it to them, and they manage the contracts.
USPR sells that to them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They pay for it. But I just wanted to share and remind everybody that because of our exchange settlement agreement with Metropolitan, the impacts, if their rates go up because of the pumping costs that they have to move the water from, if they lose the hydropower, that won't impact us because we have a stabilized and set rate.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no more questions, we are now, excuse me, going to move to our action item, which is to approve assignment of San Diego County Water Authority's semi-tropic groundwater banking rights and sale of 7,717 acre-feet of banked water. Again, I will throw this to Imported Water Director Mina Westford for presentation.
I actually get to stand and talk to you guys, so thank you. Today, we talked about cost pressures with pure water. We talked about the uncertainty of the Colorado River. And I want to talk to you today about our groundwater banking assets. It shows that we have this rounded, diverse portfolio. So today's item is really about putting our groundwater banking assets to enhance our flexibility and continue to deliver reliable water to the San Diego region. It's been a while since we talked about our groundwater bank, so I thought I would do a quick refresher. The Semi-Tropic Groundwater Bank is one of California's largest groundwater banks located in Kern County in the southern part of the San Joaquin Valley. Its location is a critical hub that allows its members to store water in wet years, recover in dry years, and facilitate regional transfers. Only agencies with water rights, storage agreements, and access to state and federal conveyance systems can bank and transfer water through the Semi-Tropic Bank. Every transaction requires a lot of coordination and approvals. Semi-Tropic actually represents one of Water Authority's earliest investments in long-term drought resilience. Using funds designated from state legislation back in 2002, and as a key part of our quantification settlement agreement, the Water Authority acquired its interest in 70,000 acre-feet of groundwater storage. During that same year, the Water Authority purchased about 23,007 acre-feet of water from north of the Bay Delta rice farmers. At that time, that investment was about us being prepared, making sure that we had water available when the hydrologic systems were stressed. Today, because of our diversified and reliable supply portfolio, we have an opportunity to use those assets differently. We no longer need to rely on the stored water for core regional supplies, and it allows us to do something equally as important. We are going to convert this asset into a financial value and strategic flexibility for our ratepayers. And that's exactly what this agreement before you is going to do. It's going to create an opportunity. Instead of holding on to unused water, we can convert it into a financial value and have future flexibility. So we've done some things with this groundwater storage account before. In 2017, we leased some of the banking rights to a company called Homer, and we made a small net revenue. More recently, during the 2022 drought and the 2023 drought, we sold water and banking rights to Metropolitan Water District.
Today, we have about 7,717 acre feet in the accounts right now. This gives you a snapshot of our storage capacity and then what they call annual puts and annual takes. You have to put water in and you have to take water out. In our storage now, we have that 7,717 acre feet. So I'd like to introduce to you some potential new partners, Westside Agriculture. They are a large, sophisticated agriculture and water infrastructure partner out of the San Joaquin Valley. They farm about 3,500 acres of permanent crops and actively manage water supplies and storage. Behind me is Mr. Matt Payne. He's president of the company, and his colleague Rob Steiner is here with us today. And so I hope you'll have a chance to talk to them. If you have any difficult questions, I'm going to call them up to the microphone and ask them to help me answer them. Next slide. The agreement that we have before you is about active portfolio management. We are monetizing a non-essential asset today while preserving optionality for the future, and it builds upon our prior success. We would sell the remaining 7,717 acre feet of water out of the bank to Westside and assign our banking capacity rights while retaining key long-term protections. This transaction should generate about $3.4 million in immediate net value. I know we were talking about what to do with our money, but $3.4 million in immediate net value and a long-term value estimated up to about $30 million through fees retained and not paying for the actual O&M costs that we have to pay every year for these banks. We're reducing our cost exposure, but we're still keeping our long-term flexibility intact. Next slide. So the benefits of this agreement, similar to the agreements in the recent years where we've already generated some financial value, but this one is a little different in that it truly reflects a broader shift in how we are positioning the Water Authority with other partners outside the region. We're going to retain our second priority storage rights. We maintain the ability to reclaim some capacity if we needed it. And meanwhile, Westside assumes all the ongoing banking costs. But I want to stress that aside from the immediate cash value of this agreement will afford us, it really does strengthen partnerships beyond our region. It supports the agricultural reliability in the Central Valley. It opens the door to future exchanges and infrastructure collaboration throughout California. And it's aligned to how we've been positioning ourselves in the recent months. And it's going to leverage our investments while creating options for us. So with that, this agreement turns an underutilized asset into real value today while preserving our flexibility for tomorrow. And it reflects exactly how your board has asked our team to manage our portfolios in this era. So with that, staff recommends authorizing the general manager to execute the agreement with Westside Agriculture for the assignment of Semitropic's banking rights and the sale of existing stored water.
Thank you. We have Director Madaffer.
Thank you very much, Chair Myers. First, congrats to Mina and the team for bringing this forward. This is a deal we have been talking about, at least behind the scenes, for quite some time. And I'm glad it's finally here for this board and this committee to consider. You know, I strongly support this. As Mina was saying, this is a really smart move for our agency. It's taking value, it's taking water, similar to our deals with Western and Eastern. And it really, ultimately, this is a ratepayer deal. It helps with revenues that eventually can either pay down debt or soften the impacts of rate increases that we know will be happening. And I just strongly urge the committee to support this. It's another step, another smart step in the right direction, not only for prudent water management, but it's a great move for our ratepayers. And again, congratulations to Dan and Mina and the team.
Thank you, Director Heidemann. And then after that, Director Ayala.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'm just curious, how did we market the water and how did we get to a relationship with Westside? How does that work?
Aqua.
Fair enough. Thanks. Director Ayala.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Nina, Dan, and the entire staff. Congratulations again. The your ability to monetize some of the assets that we have is impressive, especially in this time. So I wanted to congratulate you on that and everybody who's been involved. I had a couple of procedural questions because if I understand it, this came a little, I guess my question is, could you share what drove the timing of when this was placed on the agenda?
We've been working with Westside for about a year and a half trying to get to this agreement. I think there were some stops and starts along the way. I think the timing of why we wanted to put it on the agenda, you know, we tried to do it a couple months ago and was hoping we could get it done by the end of 2025. I'll leave it to Dan or David, if you want to.
Yeah, I can. Thank you, Mina. I can speak to the structure, the business structure of the deal. I think that we had terms largely in place for quite some time. And we've been working on the legal end of things for the past several months to get that straightened out.
Okay, thank you. A couple more questions, if you don't mind, Chairman. I guess then, David, who drafted the original agreement? Was it our outside counsel?
The template originally came from Westside, and I think I know what you're getting now. You know, why did the agreement not land in the packet until yesterday morning when it was on the agenda, you know, as of last week? And not unlike the first water exchange agreement we did with Western, we were sort of negotiating some of the finer points of risk allocation right up until the day before the board meeting or 2 days before the board meeting. In this particular instance, this agreement shifted. We were, so in May last year, if you recall, we were here in closed session and the board approved price and term for this particular agreement and the vast majority of the business terms. And that was a lease that was going to have a specific expiration date. As we went through the negotiation with Westside, it became obvious that based on the nature of the banking contracts, the more appropriate legal vehicle was going to be an assignment and not a lease. And that assignment, at least a portion of it, is perpetual, which necessitated coming back to this board for that piece of the approval. And during the final throes of final document preparation, we had a conversation between Thursday of last week and Tuesday afternoon to square some of the discrepancies in the legal risk. And the intention was to have that document done at the same time it went on the agenda. But for reasons beyond Westside and Water Authority's control, there were some new people involved. It took a meeting. I met with Matt and his revised legal team on Tuesday, you know, hammered out the last pieces of it. And that's what led to the delay in it coming to the package. The business terms have been fully baked for a while. Although there are some wrinkles there, changing the nature of the agreement and then getting his new legal team up to speed as to what we'd already agreed upon in terms of risk shifting was sort of the driver on that piece.
So David, if you could help me out, if there was a timeline to this, when business terms were met and committed to, and when the agreement was finalized, what's that timeline?
I think we received draft agreements, the most recent revised draft agreements, at the very end of March. So, and recall, we're also in the process. We have the two water transfer agreements, and we had approved language as of last week, and there was a change in language from Westside to the Water Authority that shifted our risk, which was, you know, not acceptable at that point in time. And it took a couple of days to square that up. But that was primarily a driver because there was a different legal team on the other side. So the lawyers that we had been working with, they've got an investment committee. They have a general counsel of an investment committee. And that organization, we had never spoken before. And so when that came over last week, you know, we reached out and said, hey, we've got to rectify this
last issue, which we thought had been solved. It took a couple of days to get that done, and now here we are.
Is it typical that an outside or a buyer, in this case, originate the legal agreement and not us?
Well, we only have one water bank, and we've never done a transaction like this. So it would it be typical? It really depends, you know, on the circumstance. You know, we in the water transfer agreements, we provided the initial draft and worked through that. Here, they provided an initial draft and we worked through, you know, their document. You know, the two water transfer agreements and this assignment are agreements that, you know, the water authority typically has really strong bargaining power. When we're dealing with an RFP contractor or whatever, we've got standard terms and those are generally accepted by that community. This is a highly complicated, unique agreement transferring an interest in a very unique piece of property. So it's not something where, you know, there's an example that the Water Authority has done. There's very few examples of things like this just in general, because remember, it's three agreements. Not only is there an assignment agreement, there's also that's contingent on a banked water agreement. And then there's another complicated agreement that allows us to have this second right to continue to use the facility. And so they all have to mesh. And there's different risk allocations for each of those agreements as well. And the most important thing for the Water Authority is once you do something like this, because these water banks are, you know, they're subject to new legislation since they've been created with the Groundwater Management Act. We have a whole host of new concerns in the state with groundwater and treatment and all that sort of thing. Very important that if we're going to assign the rights to use, we're also going to assign the risk associated with ownership. And so that was the last thing we were dealing with.
David, in the agreement, does it allow the buyer to transfer their rights to another different entity?
No, this is their assignment.
Only theirs?
Yes.
Does anything in the agreement allow the water to be used for anything other than that?
There's no limitation on what they can use the water for. And I don't think that there's an expectation from us that this will be ag water. This is, you know, where the source water. So there's two components of the water, right? There's the water that's in the bank right now that we're selling, the 7,000 acre feet or 7,500. And then West Side as an entity has access to other supplies of water. They would use that, I would anticipate, as a, you know, they're going to use it to store, and then they're going to distribute it to buyers wherever they may be below the bank.
So it isn't limited to agriculture or farming?
No.
Thank you so much, Director. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We have eight people in the queue, Director Fong Sakai and then Director Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the efforts of staff and our general manager to search for and figure out the highest and best use of our assets and to give us a return on our investments. Really happy to see this in action. I look forward to working with Westside. I am in support of this contract moving forward. And so I will move staff's recommendation.
All right, we have a motion and we have a second. Any other comment to Dr. Fong Sakai at this point?
No, sir.
All right, thank you. We have Director Kirschbaum and then Director Ray.
Thank you, Chair. I want to congratulate staff and legal counsel for coming to this agreement. I'm supportive of staff recommendation, but I just had a question for you, Mina. So in your presentation, you talked a lot about preserving flexibility. So I kind of see this as like we're selling an asset and we're getting a, you know, financial benefit from it. But I'm curious what you meant by preserving flexibility. So can you elaborate that on a little bit?
We have a second right of priority. If we had water in the Central Valley, let's just say we got even more creative and we started buying and selling water, we have the right to perhaps lease back the capacity to put water in the ground. It also gives us an opportunity at one point, you know,
Matt can tell you better than I don't think farmers want to pay $3,500 for desal water, but there we thought about, even when we got them, that there was opportunities that we could do some exchanges. When we got the water that's in the banks now, it's north of the Delta, because we're not a state water project contractor and we're not a Central Valley project contractor. So we can't actually buy that water and put it in. It has to be non-project water. But perhaps working with our partners, there might be some opportunities that we're not closing ourselves off if in the future.
Thank you.
We have Director Ray and then Director Wall.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not a member of this committee, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Kudos to Mina and team for accomplishing this. This is a great opportunity for the farmers in the Central Valley. And as a member agency whose customer demographic is 93% farmers, I really think this is a great thing for them. I'm happy to support the California farmers. Because the Water Authority is selling water that was paid for and stored for many, many years, it's generating non-rate revenue from a farming program. And so I see a direct nexus between this non-rate revenue and using it to support and enhance the current PSAR program to support the San Diego farmers. If we don't consider doing that with this revenue, it creates a messaging problem with the farming community in this region, who in some cases are paying over $2,000 an acre foot for their water. I'm pleased to support this agreement and help farmers in the Central Valley, but I'd really, really love if we can support farmers in our own region that we serve here. Thanks.
Thank you, General Manager Denham.
Yeah, I was gonna wait till the end, Director Ray, but that's a perfect segue into what I was going to say about the whole financial side of this. So the way that we're viewing this with our finance team is the money that's coming in immediately, the $3.5 million, that needs to be restored to the supply rate category and doesn't necessarily qualify as non-rate revenue. Which does qualify as non-rate revenue would be the proceeds from any of the transactions. So this is the put and take, I think, to your point, and then it'll be at the board's discretion to determine how that non-rate revenue is applied, whether it's to the special ag rate, I think, as you're suggesting, some other category, but yeah, that would be how we're gonna handle this. So to that point, the 3.5 coming in today, is not going to be considered as part of the rate calculation, or it'll be part of the cash flow coming in, but it's not going to have a material impact on rates. So I just wanted to put that out there as well.
Thank you. We have Director Wall, then Vice Chair Hilliker, Robach, and then Arant.
Thank you, Chair Meyer, for letting me speak. I'm not on this committee. Thank you for that presentation, Mina. Really appreciated that. I just have a question about SGMA. Is SGMA affecting this at all, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act?
I believe it will.
I can comment on that. I mean, SGMA is in effect. All of these water banks are going to have to comply in some way or another. They're all working through it individually with DWR. I don't have any specifics on SGMA right now, but that's the law that it governs our groundwater right now. So it will play a role.
But will that affect rate of sale, like, our projections negatively, or you don't know?
I can't comment on their business end.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Vice Chair Hilliker.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm non-committee member, but let me tell you, I'm really excited about this, as usual, because I am a farmer. I love it when California agriculture is being helped one way or another. So I really appreciate the fact that staff has gone to the lengths that they've gone. And Director Ray, you stole my thunder, because I was going to bring that up too.
Thank you, Director Robach, and then Director Arant, and then Director Freehoff also.
So Mina, I was trying to understand, looking at the, I guess that's page 39, current out-of-county assets. So we have rights to those three different water banking entities, is that correct?
Yeah.
And the other two are currently zero, and then this is the remaining, water in that. So is this, so we are we giving this? Well, I guess they're just going to use that 1,777 acre feet, and then unless, and then we can later put water in back into any of these, or they'll have the future rights to that. How does that?
Yeah, we would have to pay them to use a second priority of that if there was space available and if we had water to put in it.
Okay. And on the other two water, Rosamond water banks, we can put water in there if we want to in the future?
They're all packaged together. We're selling all of our storage.
Okay,
we're leasing all of our storage. Assigning all of our storage.
So we'll be out of the bit. So whatever they want to do in those water banks.
That's right.
Got it. Okay.
That's right. But every time that they put an acre foot of water in or take an acre foot of water out, they pay us the $150 an acre foot.
Okay.
Okay. Director Freehoff.
All right. Thank you very much. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm not on the committee. I appreciate an opportunity to talk. I will support this item when it comes before the board. You know, looking at our urban water management plan, it is clear that we no longer need this important asset, and I think we should monetize it. So I do support it. I do have a question. In the board report, it states that we do need approval by Semi-Tropic. I was just curious as to what their position is on this. Do they need to take action? That's my question. Thank you.
Yes, they would need to take an action to allow us to assign these over to Westside.
And are they supporting this effort? Is that going to be a problem?
Yes. Our meetings with them have. They've been very supportive.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, Director Arant.
Oh, thank you. I want to heartily support the comments made by Ms. Ray, Director Ray, concerning agriculture. This is an exciting agreement, and our staff keeps hitting home runs. It's just amazing. You must be leading the league, but this is pretty exciting. But I think that accounting procedures aside, I think there is a messaging issue here, and that is that we are selling water to Central Valley farmers, which they're fine. I like Central Valley farmers for $450 an acre foot. Our people are paying north of $2,000. So I think we need to think about that. And hopefully this money winds up helping our PSAR program, maybe enhancing a little bit in the future. So that's just a concern I have, and a messaging issue. And I think we need to think about it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. So we have the motion by Director Fong. We have the motion by Director Fong Sakai, a second by Director Ayala. So I believe this is going to be a roll call vote. Yes.
Chair Myers?
Yes.
Vice Chair Katz?
Yes.
Vice Chair Madaffer? Directors Ayala?
Yes.
Castañeda?
Yes.
Flessy?
Yes.
Fong Sakai?
Aye.
Heidemann?
Yes.
Kirschbaum?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes, approve.
Rivera?
Yes.
Scalzetti?
Yes.
And Serrano is absent. Chair, your motion passes.
Thank you very much. Also want to again thank the Westside folks for coming down and making themselves available. You're welcome to hang around for lunch if you want to. And you can enjoy our San Diego hospitality. I think that is it. We have no information items. There are no closed session items, and we are adjourned.
So we have water planning next. We're going to try to go through it fairly quickly. We do have the public hearing on the urban water management plan, and then we'll have lunch. 5 minutes.